How many first dates would you say you went on?
I'm scared to answer that question.
Alex Pollock is a Nashville writer, attorney, and up until recently, a perennially single man looking for love.
It's in the hundreds, I think. I heard the gasps.
Did you have a first date routine?
Unfortunately, yes. I think there were some similar gestures and similar stories. I was often guilty of feeling like I was performing. This is the time I'm gonna order the meal, but say I really like spicy food, and you know what that means if I like spicy food.
What does that mean?
That's why those dates didn't go anywhere.
Why do people do that on first dates? Why do they perform?
It does almost feel like a play. It's like on Thursday night at this restaurant at 8 o'clock, me and Lindsay are gonna talk and we're gonna show what we got. We showed our five best pictures and our three witty lines that maybe some of us have used before, and let's perform.
From Nashville Public Radio, this is Movers and Thinkers, where we explore deep ideas with some of the most interesting people in Nashville. Today's theme, what is love? Because as simple as it sounds, it can be maddening to pin down. We might be figuring out whether we're really in love, how we can stay in love, or even how to get out of it with the least amount of pain. And my three guests today have all explored aspects of this journey. Alex Pollock has written about dating in the age of smartphones and swiping apps. Jeannie Ingram is a relationship therapist who helps couples understand and work through their differences.
We point our finger and say, you've changed. And what's really changed, of course, is our brain chemistry.
And Suling Shea is a divorce attorney who specializes in collaborative divorce, helping marriages dissolve as amicably as possible.
You have to remember why you were attracted to that person in the first place. And if you can find that, yeah, you can collaboratively divorce.
We'll talk about your brain on love and the important details people falling in love might miss about each other. Stay with us. When you meet someone you're attracted to, something happens in your brain. You can't help it. It's chemical. So what causes one person to make you feel tingly and excited and another to bore you? Jeannie Ingram subscribes to a theory.
According to Imago theory, which is the kind of therapy I practice, the chemical thing is a perfect template of traits that you grew up with that are both familiar and they're also mysterious.
So you project your own experiences onto the person you like.
And I'm not consciously experiencing, oh, this person's like my mother. But there is a little bell that's ringing way down in the limbic system of the brain. And off we go with some delicious hormones and peptides and some of the best cocktails around.
Ahem. Excuse me, bartender. Can I get one of those?
We call them the love drugs. Dopamine, phenylethylamine, norepinephrine, so we can stay awake all night and go to work on 2 hours of sleep with a smile on our face. And it lasts for a while.
And then what happens?
And then we move in together. So, just a little warning about that. If you want to protract that part of your relationship, I highly recommend a long engagement, you know, and get to know this person before you live with them.
So what happens once the chemicals go away and people are like, oh, you're a real person with strengths and weaknesses?
Well, what happens is we point our finger and say, you've changed. And what's really changed, of course, is our brain chemistry.
We loved that they seemed so playful and carefree, but now they just seem thoughtless.
And doting becomes controlling. The quality that we fell in love with is usually the one that drives us nuts down the road.
This formula doesn't always make for the most lasting relationships. And that's where Suling Shea comes in. In a culture where people tend to share only the sparkly, enamored parts of their love, especially online, I bet you have a friend who does this, I'm really intrigued by the perspective Su Ling has, seeing so many couples end their relationships.
When you see couples who seem to be happy, often they talk about this amazing story at the beginning, like he knew right away that she was going to be the one, and that's sort of the story that they have for the rest of their relationship. And I wonder, when couples are divorcing, do they still have these stories that they talk about? Or by that point, is it just like they've forgotten the fact that he thought that she was the one, and at this point, it's all moot?
They have forgotten. Because I think a lot of times when we get together with someone as a couple, we go by the emotions, the whatever is going on in that cocktail, but we do not look at things objectively by looking at people's actions. People can say a lot of things. They can compliment you, be charming, be, you know, kind for a little while. But you have to watch over the long haul how they actually behave. How are they respectful of what you think, what you are saying? How are they respectful about other people? And that you can only tell if you objectively look at behavior and not just go on chemistry alone.
It's a matter of finishing the cocktail and taking a sober look. And sometimes what you see isn't that great.
And I think a lot of times by the time they reach the point of a divorce, they have realized that aspect of things.
You became an attorney after you went through a divorce. Is that correct?
Correct.
How do you come to the practice differently than someone who hasn't gone through that?
I think it helps when you can empathize with somebody, when you can walk in their shoes. For example, you can empathize that the trust may not be there anymore. And once the trust is violated, how hard it is for that couple to work through all the different issues in their relationship. All the assets they've built up, their children. Once that's broken down, it's very hard for that couple to resolve all their differences.
This means, as hard as it was to stay in the relationship, it can be just as hard getting out. Some of the couples Su Ling works with are trying to do a so-called collaborative divorce, which, at least in theory, is less contentious than a traditional one.
What makes one divorce easier than another?
Usually collaborative divorces work when both couples are committed to being honest with each other. That means full disclosure of all assets, even though like one of the spouses handled all the finances and the other one has no clue as to what the finances are. So you have to have that ability to be honest with each other and for that trust to be still there in order for a collaborative divorce to work.
So it's almost like they still have bits of their love
Yes.
that they're tapping into?
Yes. You have to be generous, not in terms of like just, you know, keeling over and giving away everything, but generous in spirit is what I think is important. And then the other part is find some shred of what you used to once love about that person. You have to remember why you were attracted to that person in the first place. What was it that you loved about them? And if you can find that, yeah, you can collaboratively divorce.
Or go to marriage therapy.
I'll go to marriage therapy. That's
one
true.
One-stop shopping right
that
here.
That is true.
Coming up, we'll talk about the importance of looking into someone's eyes, which is apparently more important than I realized, and hear some pressing questions from the audience. Stay with us. Welcome back to Movers and Thinkers. We're talking about love and what it is. And at this point in the conversation, I feel the need to confess something to the audience about Alex, our resident dating guru. As you can hear, I feel a little awkward about it.
So for the, I want to say we actually first met on OkCupid like 2 years ago.
We are going there.
Okay. I remember seeing your profile and it was like the perfect amount of witty, like intelligent. I was like, this guy looks great. We went out for dinner and there was like no chemistry, which I'm guessing you probably agree because neither of us followed up on that. But I also remember thinking at the time, on paper, this person looks so great. And like, if someone is good enough, like if there's nothing wrong with them, like, why can't you like them? So what is chemistry? What is this thing that we're looking for when we're going on a first date and trying to decide if we want to go on the next date?
Well, I think what you're getting at is really interesting because OkCupid, we have all this information, right? We get to really reveal ourselves, our, you know, mutual likes and dislikes. But then the chemical thing is you can't find it on OkCupid. They have these questionnaires where you have to answer 100 questions about supposedly revealing your personality, and it has a meter on what percentage of a match you are. But that chemical thing, I don't think we've cracked it yet.
And it seems like newer methods of online dating don't even bother with this, trying to guide you to someone you're compatible with. I'm talking, of course, about Tinder. Can you explain what a swiping app is?
A swiping app is a drug. It's something you use by brushing your finger across a sea of faces that in a city like Nashville never ends. And if you like that person based on the less than a second you see the face, or the maybe 4 seconds if you're really giving a careful look, you'll say yes and swipe right. And if you don't want to see that person again, you'll swipe left. And then you'll swipe and you'll swipe and you'll swipe and you'll swipe and you'll swipe. At one point, I just moved to Nashville and I was determined to meet people. So as you mentioned, I was on OkCupid, an old-fashioned app. I was on Tinder, I was on Bumble, I was on Coffee Meets Bagel, I was on Hinge, I was on something called Happn, which I don't even know what that is. And for better or for worse, I do think the swiping app kind of took into account more of that chemical limbic element that you mentioned, Jeannie. There's less information to deal with. The swiping apps really favor the pictures, whereas something like OkCupid favors more of the text. So by favoring the pictures, you're getting caveman or cavewoman. And it's just amazing how quickly, I'm not necessarily proud, but just how quickly I'd feel like this is a person I'd want to meet. And I'd know nothing about this person. It really is, feels like it's going through some evolutionary gobbledy.
Jeannie leans into her mic.
Do you think it was the eyes?
It was the eyes.
Huh. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Eyes are the window to the soul, right?
I guess.
You know, so you can look at a person's eyes, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's also what we're projecting into those eyes.
One criticism that I've heard about like dating app culture is that it sort of cheapens the whole experience because you always know there's another person that you would connect with on Tinder. So you can even go on the date, and if you're not 100% into it, there's no reason to keep going. Did you feel that way?
Sometimes I did wonder sometimes if I'd gone on this date 20 years ago, maybe I would think, oh, we have some things in common. I should give this person another chance, even if I didn't feel like it was love at first sight. Whereas now it's in your phone and your phone never leaves you. At least a few years ago, by comparison, you had to go to a laptop and maybe you're away from your computer for a few hours. Now you're never away. So I would be in lines at lunch at work and then just idly swiping. And there's 25 people just went by. Who knows who those people are? They could be really special people, but that eye window to the soul, like transmission might have gotten a little faulty.
Across from Alex, Su Ling is not having this. She's shaking her head. This kind of modern dating technique, she says, just isn't designed to lead to lasting relationships.
I will never do an app. I would never meet somebody through an app. I like to see them in person. I like to see their actions. I like to see them in their eyes. I like to see how they behave, everything. And you can't do that with an app. Unfortunately, well, it scares me to death.
One thing I do think it makes you lazy. I really remember one particular exchange where I was getting really frustrated with these apps. I'd been on there for a few years. And then I got a message from some woman named Maggie, and the message was, "Hey." And my response was, "Way to start the conversation off with a bang, Maggie." "I know." And then a few minutes later, Maggie cursed me out on the app and promptly unmatched me.
I have to say, like, that was like 85% of how I got messages on Tinder. It was, "Hey." So I'm a little impressed that it was only one woman. It's good for us.
Judging by Su Ling's line of work, even if you get far past that "hey" stage, it might not work out. The fact is, a lot of couples just don't. And since she sees pair after pair deciding to end their relationships, I have to wonder,
doesn't that make you jaded after a while? That, like, there isn't such a thing as just, like, a happy couple?
We only see the bad cases. I have to remind myself that all the time. I only see the bad ones. I would say that people are imperfect. We are all imperfect. You know, you've got to accept that in your mate. That person cannot be, you know, at all times, I don't know, caring, sensitive.
Perfect.
Perfect, yes. They can't. And you've got to be forgiving of that. That's why generosity of spirit, that's where it comes in.
In other words, if you can get to the point of accepting that your partner isn't perfect, your relationship might not be doomed, as Jeannie is also quick to point out. In fact, she says many couples just need a little self-reflection like that.
It's really beginning to understand a relationship as a journey where you live with another person and that person is not you. And that process we call differentiation is how we begin to accept those differences and learn to love those parts that we don't like. I consider myself a helper, so I try to help my partner improve. But, you know, if my partner doesn't want that improvement, then I'm really just trying to change her. And that's not going to help a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So we have to learn to love another person by accepting them and celebrating those differences. And to me, that's what true love is.
How often are you successful in getting couples to do that?
You know, most people come because they want help. Some people want to check the box and say they tried marriage therapy. But the people who really, you know, I have a joke. You know how many therapists it takes to change a light bulb?
How many?
It only takes one, but the light bulb has to want to change.
Yes.
Those couples who really, yeah. they come in and they go, "We have a life together, we have children, we have assets, we have everything going for us, we have family ties, we want to work this out." Mm-hmm. And I say, "We're going to learn a new way to communicate, a new way to communicate our needs and desires, and help them understand that the thing that is now the problem in the relationship is really more about working on the self than it is trying to fix our partner, no matter how good we are at helping our partner."
I wonder, what is it like to be in a relationship with a relationship therapist?
I can't even begin to imagine. But let's put it this way. She's probably going to win some medals, you know, at the end of it. Probably a whole wall full of plaques.
Okay, so now we're at the audience Q&A. We had a lot of questions this time. In fact, it was probably our most inquisitive audience yet. But we're going to get to just three of them. Ready? Here's question one.
Do you think that online dating apps have killed romance?
Well, I'm biased. I met my girlfriend on Bumble a year ago. On my profile, I had something to the effect of, "Let's go somewhere fun and spy on people and make up stories about them," which I hope doesn't sound creepy to the audience, but it was supposed to be playful. And anyways, Laura's response was, "How about a diner, ellipses, waffles and scandal?" And then waffles and scandal is still something I think about when I think about Laura, because there was this, I don't know if it's romance, but it was this playfulness and this sense of humor. I immediately knew that I could talk to her.
There is no greater feeling than the feeling of being gotten by another person. She got you. No, I think it introduces romance. I think the idea that you're out shopping for a needle in a haystack and there's always one more profile you haven't looked at. But when you get that limbic resonance going, you don't want to keep swiping. So
I do think there's also like the idea of meeting someone on Tinder does seem very unlikely. So when you hear about couples who met on Tinder, it's sort of like, wow, that is an amazing story. And it has this improbability factor that makes such a good, you know, meet cute story. But even though like everyone is doing it all the time.
I meet a lot of couples who met on Tinder.
Yes. Question two.
My friends and I, we can't seem to agree on this and our minds change all the time. But do you believe in soulmates?
I believe that there is someone that you can communicate with at a deeper level than you can with other people. And I guess that's where the soulmate comes in. Someone that can really understand where, you know, when you're saying things, what you mean by it, what are you feeling.
I agree with Sue.
And I think it's a decision, ultimately. I think it's a decision to make your partner your soulmate.
So is compatibility a thing? Like, are you more compatible with some people than others? Or you really could do that with, like, anyone?
Well, you certainly want to have the chemistry, right? But ultimately, soulmate, to me, is something that really sounds amazing, and it is for a while, and then it can fade. Not always. And I know couples who have been together 60 years who have never fallen out of love.
And now for question three.
As I was sitting here, that line from Love Story popped into my head, where they say, love means never having to say you're sorry, which, based on how many times, I'm pretty sure I've had to say that this week. I don't buy. So what, in your guys' opinion, are some of the more harmful definitions of love that come from the media or pop culture?
That one's probably the biggest crock I've ever seen.
Yeah. I think when the movies say love equals great sex, great sex doesn't mean love.
Great sex means great sex.
Yes, that's all it is.
For me, it was the 2004 movie Garden State, which features a scene where Natalie Portman puts headphones over a depressed Zach Braff and makes him listen to a song by The Shins. And after that movie, for the next 5 or 6 years, I thought, that's how I'm going to meet my mate. And I don't think that was a great lesson to learn.
Wait, you thought that you were going to meet her by her putting headphones on you?
Yeah, I thought something similar to that. That it would be me sitting in a waiting room where it's Chipotle, and then life would happen and love would happen. I think, in short, that I could just wait for my movie moment to happen.
Well, Alex, Jeannie, Suling, thank you so much. This was fascinating.
Thank you.
That's Alex Pollock, Jeannie Ingram, and Suling Shea. Movers and Thinkers is a labor of love by a lot of people. Carl Peterson and Cameron Adkins are the show's engineers. Editors are Mac Linebaugh, Anita Bug, and Blake Farmer. And the show is produced and mixed by me, Emily Seiner. Music for this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. Stay up to date with Movers and Thinkers and all things podcasts at Nashville Public Radio by signing up for our mailing list at wpln.org/movers. You'll be notified whenever there's a new taping or a new episode coming up. I also want to encourage you to leave a review on iTunes. So if you're listening to this on the Apple Podcasts app, you just go to the Movers and Thinkers show page and tap the number of stars you want to leave. It really does make a difference. So thank you if you've already reviewed. If not, please do that. And I want to give a shout out to all the other podcasts at the station. You can find that by searching Nashville Public Radio in your podcast app. I'm Emily Seiner, and this is Nashville Public Radio.